Okay. Why don't you just go on with what you were saying at the end of the last tape about the healthcare team that you're part of?
I go out to rural North Carolina with a healthcare team so that we go there for that purpose. But I often feel my role is to really get to know the person and to humanize the situation. Chapel Hill has sort of a magic kind of way when you go into these areas because they feel like, you know, we have the answers.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to say to them, we don't have the answers. We're here to do something if we can. But you're here. We take students with us.
Mm-hmm.
And you're educating our students.
Mm-hmm.
You're here contributing that will continue afterward. And my students love going there.
Mm-hmm.
The other place we go is the prison, to McCain Prison, which is where all the older sick prisoners of North Carolina are now. It's like a giant nursing home in a way. But we've been working with them for 2 years, and I take students there with me as well. But that's an equally fascinating experience, because quite obviously these people have committed major crimes,
mm-hmm.
and sort of what led to that, and many of them are ending their lives. And needing to deal with that before they die
mm-hmm.
is another major issue that's quite different.
Yeah.
Poverty and no education, I would say, are the two common themes that come through.
Huh.
But that's not always the case. Not always the case. But it's my, and my students, really, it's a very sobering experience
mm-hmm.
to take them there when we go.
And these are mostly your students in the medical school or
these
social
are,
work?
We take both? Interdisciplinary students.
Okay.
They're students from social work, medicine, PT, OT.
Okay.
So they're interdisciplinary.
Uh-huh.
Each time we take a trip, we take the interdisciplinary student team with us. And then when we go up to Northampton and Halifax County, we have students from Campbell joining us
mm-hmm.
in pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's a pharmacy student from UNC too. And then sometimes we have students from ECU joining us.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple years ago, over telemedicine, actually, I had a social work student. In order to have a student placed there, because our goal is to have these professionals move there afterwards,
mm-hmm.
if they're exposed, to upgrade the quality of the personnel in those counties, was I supervised her for 2 years over telemedicine. So it's not necessarily even UNC students in order to get her to take a job there.
Huh.
So afterwards.
Huh.
So I think that's also another charge, is what can we do to help bring personnel in that will improve and meet the needs of the rural communities. And what's happening in many rural communities is that the young people can't find employment. And so they're leaving, and you're getting more and more people who are old.
That are isolated.
And isolated and needing care. That's
huh.
right. Yeah. Another issue, of course, if you're bringing personnel in, getting people to move there, is maybe the spouse can't find work. They're likely to be professional, too.
Uh-huh.
Education for their children. Salaries are not going to be as much. And your living expenses won't be as much, but if you want to go to Europe or buy a car or something, it's going to cost you the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is a deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And the isolation of not having fellow professionals to sort of bounce off each other and be supportive.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you were talking about some of the changes that have taken place in terms of elder care generally, sort of medical attitudes towards death and dying.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you mentioned was an older philosophy of doctors not wanting to tell patients what was wrong with them, and
mm-hmm.
that has changed to some degree. Certainly people have more control over the treatment of family members and that kind of thing. What would you say, other than the things that we've already talked about, what are some other important, what you see as really significant changes that have taken place in terms of the attitude, medical attitudes towards caring for people at the end of their lives?
I think hospice has probably had the biggest effect.
Uh-huh.
Because a national movement of consumerism, we really pushed that organization. So I think you have many situations now where you have people embracing the philosophy of hospice,
mm-hmm.
where it's palliative care. and not curative care all the way to the end mm-hmm. when hope is no longer there. And the other issue, I think, and continues to be an issue, is adequate pain medication and the ability of physicians to relate to that. I've heard physicians say, well, I couldn't give the person more because they'll become addicted.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dying. Well, that's absurd.
What difference does it make?
Right, exactly. So I think there's a good bit of change in that. I think probably one of the things that maybe hasn't changed enough, I know it hasn't changed enough, is helping people, doctors, nurses, whatever, the frontline caregivers, become comfortable with death.
Uh-huh.
And I think you have to be comfortable with your own death before you can become comfortable with working with people who are dying. And so therefore, I think, you know, in the education or somehow, we need to help people reach this level.
Uh-huh.
Of comfort.
Uh-huh.
So that they can be more themselves and working with people. I know a lot of people when they're dying feel that they're abandoned by their healthcare provider.
Right.
That they don't stay with them. I think that's getting better, but it has a long way to go.
Do you see changes in terms of the way medical students and social workers are trained and asking them to examine how they think about their own deaths and face that?
Is
that
I have my students write their obituary the first day of class in my death and dying class. And then the last class, they bring me their new obituary because I want to see how much they change over a semester in attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's absolutely startling. And this is an interdisciplinary class. And for others, it remains practically the same. So I've been fascinated by using that to see what happens. And they also journal for me because we get into some pretty tough cases which are videoed, some of them, and some of them discussion, and a lot of ethical issues about that, bring attorneys in, etc. Because I feel like they need to have this experience before they leave. We had our first dentist join us last semester. Which for the students, I think he enjoyed it, and for my students it was a really good experience. They're generally or mostly nurses and social workers, but you get speech and you get PT and OT. We've never had a medical student take it. But the dentist was, and public health people, but the dentist was the first one either out of the dental school or the medical school to join this class. And I think next year I'll probably have more because of his having taken it. Consequently, he's going to go to work in a nursing home.
I imagine that's a real need. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yes, big need. It's very difficult to find dentists who work in nursing homes.
And you, but you say you've never had a medical student in your death and dying
class. Well, I think they have a class.
Oh.
I think they have a class. It's taught by Larry Churchill.
So,
though it would add greatly to our class if we did, because they'd bring a perspective we didn't have. I think we need to look at a lot of issues at the university and develop more and more interdisciplinary classes. And have experiences. I'm doing a lot of that with my students in gerontology, in which they work with residents in medicine and family practice and OT, PT. Nursing has basically been from Duke, frankly. There hasn't been much from here because they don't have a very strong geriatric program. But I think it's really important for them to work together and understand what each other's strengths and weaknesses are and how they can gel a situation of work. I think probably, if there's one thing in medicine that I think is really needed is that kind of experience. And that they look at the individual more in a functional quality of life way than a disease way. And you can do that by their knowing their part and the social worker dealing with parts of it and the PT, etc. So that you give the person a different kind of overview.
Rather than more of a rescue type mentality.
Exactly. In a chronic disease particularly, I think this is really important, which is what most older people have. And hospice set the model for interdisciplinary, you know, because they that's a basic part of it. And the other thing they did, which I think is beginning to happen in medicine, but not nearly as far, is the standard, the patient and the family, the standard of care.
Mm-hmm.
The medical model has only seen the patient. The family's out here. Mm-hmm. Something you put up with. And I think that needs to change, too.
Yeah.
It doesn't work the other way.
Right. Well, we've been talking for a while. Is there anything else you'd like to say in conclusion?
Not that I can think of. I appreciate your listening to me all this time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
You've been very tolerant.
Well, it's quite a learning experience for me.
Well, thank you very much.
This concludes an interview with Florence Soltis, conducted on August 28, 1998, at her home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. The interviewer is Malin Glessman, and the tape number is 82898-FS.